on conservative talk radio, because let's just say this, I don't buy in to the overall theme of President's Day. And that is because I don't believe that every president deserves to be honored. I think that having an all-encompassing, you know, holiday that honors the 43 different men who've served as president is not the right way to go, because a lot of them have done things that have violated the United States Constitution. They are not deeming, they're not worthy of our respect and remembrance. And there are a few, though, who do deserve those accolades. We would be better off celebrating their individual birthdays than lumping them all into one.
Well, I think you make a very good point. I mean, but in today's, you know, correct idea that no one actually fails and we all, you know, no one really achieves more than others and we all get gold stars, of course we have to have a holiday where we all recognize everyone. But to your point, you know, President's Day started as George Washington's birthday, which is actually tomorrow on February 22nd, and Abraham Lincoln's birthday was February 12th. So to your point, I think we might be better off focusing on the presidents that we did have that really are true leaders, that really guided our country through difficult times and could still teach us lessons today.
All right. So who do you put in that group?
Well, I think you know, you start with George Washington. I recently put out a book called The Essential American, 25 Documents and Speeches Every American Should Own. And in there, I include his farewell address. And I think we could look at that today. And if you read his farewell address, which was published right before he stepped down after his second term, he warns us of a couple of things. Now, here's a man who, you know, fought as the head of the Continental Army. He fought for freedom. He then served for president of our country. And he knew that the transition to a new president was very important, because it would prove that we actually were not a monarchy and that we were different. And so he stepped aside willingly. But he warns us of a couple of things. One is he warns us of the risk of public debt. We have to be very careful, because debt will bring a lot of problems. So he warns us about public debt. He warns us about foreign intrigue. He warns us about getting caught up in the affairs of other countries. And he also reminds us of the importance of education, morality, and religion as foundations of our nation.
Well, it seems that we failed on all of those.
Which is why everybody should go, whether it's in my book or you can pull it up online, to go and read George Washington's farewell address, because the whole point is what he said and his concerns are just as applicable today as they were then. And it's important for us to spend a little bit of time learning about our nation's history so we can set the proper stage to move forward.
How about our third president, Thomas Jefferson? You put him in the list of presidents that we should honor and remember.
Well, I did. I mean, and again, you have the transition from Washington to Adams. The transition from Adams to Jefferson was very contentious. It was a very tough decision, and they were very, the nation was very torn up. But Jefferson got up and said, you know, let us come together and let us work together. And I think what Jefferson reminds us of is that even though we may have very different backgrounds and opinions, in the end, we have to figure out what is best for the nation and to stand up for that. And to make sure that we do consider what in the end our goal is and not just sit back. And I mean, rhetoric's important and position's important. I don't think people should compromise if the position isn't right. But I do think we have to keep the end goal in mind.
All right. Now, here's a couple presidents that I have some problems with. All right. We have Abraham Lincoln. The Union is unbroken. And then we have Teddy Roosevelt. The happy is the nation that has a glorious history. My problem with Mr. Lincoln is that he forever changed the nature of the republic. And I'm not talking about the Emancipation Proclamation, which, by the way, didn't free any of the slaves in the slave states. It only freed the slaves in the territories and the states in the Union where they didn't have slavery. And I think a lot of people miss that point, that particular declaration had no impact upon the South, which was at that time the fighting of the war, a separate nation. But here's a guy who suspended habeas corpus. He threatened to throw the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in jail when that justice wrote him and told him, Mr. President, it's not constitutional for you to suspend habeas corpus, among other things that he did, and waging a war that killed 600,000 Americans and maimed for life 1.8 million, which was a substantial portion of the population of a nation of 33 million at that time, and put us in tremendous debt over an issue that many people, Jackie, would argue wasn't just about slavery, but it was going to be about how much more powerful was the central government going to be. And a lot of people, a lot of historians would contend that that was really Lincoln's goal, was to establish the idea that the central government was going to run things in this nation in a way that it had never done before.
Well, I think you've got a very valid point. Clearly, the United States of America, as it was operating prior to the Civil War, before Abraham Lincoln became president, is much different from what, as you mentioned, how we operated and how we worked after the Civil War. Because prior to the Civil War, and you're exactly right, we were much more a loose-knit group of states that had a lot of rights and much less of a federal government. So that much I totally agree with. But, I mean, the reality is when Abraham Lincoln was elected president, we had states that were united, and before he took office, we had states that seceded from the Union. So he did not. I mean, he took the oath of office and laid out a very clear. Look at his first inaugural speech, which again is in The Essential American, and he clearly laid out a very legalistic approach to, you know, we can stay half slave and half free, but you have to be part of the Union, and here's how it would work. And he tried to bridge that gap. But the state succeeded, and we went to war.
Well, yeah, because the states, you know, they contended. They said, look, you know, we formed the Union voluntarily. We should be able to secede voluntarily if we want to without pushback from Washington. Obviously, that wasn't the case, as we know from history, what happened. Checking traffic on the 10s here, we have an ambulance responding to an injury accident at 152 just east of Dunhill. And we also have a lane closure in Santa Cruz County because of sleet and snow in the roadway. This would be Alba Road at Empire Grade Road. Jackie Cushman is our guest till the bottom of the hour. She's the author of the book, which is The Essential American, the 25 documents and speeches that every American should own. Jackie, besides Lincoln, you like Teddy Roosevelt. Now, I have a few problems with Mr. Roosevelt because I think that the guy represents big government, Republican progressivism, and this always comes at the expense of individual rights and individual liberty that the nation was founded upon. And I really truly believe that if a candidate for president were to stand up in front of the American people and say, I believe at my very core that individuals have too much power in this country, and if you elect me president, I am going to pursue policies that will give over more power and discretion to bureaucrats and Washington over your life, and I'm going to take those powers from you. That individual would not be elected president, and yet that's exactly what people like Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson did. And I would say that they did it under subterfuge because they did not tell the American people what they were going to do and what the upshot of their activities would be.
Yeah, but one of the things I think, and the speech that I actually highlight for Teddy Roosevelt is the speech he gave about the strenuous life. And I think in today's environment where we are as a nation, I think we all could spend a minute thinking about how can we live more strenuously. And Teddy Roosevelt was born into a very wealthy family, very well off, and was born asthmatic and so sick when he was young that on nights when he couldn't breathe, his father would either take him for carriage rides or hold him in his arms and walk around the house. And when he was a teenager, his father said, you know, you have the mind but not the body. You're going to have to make your body over if you really want to become anything. And Teddy Roosevelt did. And that's kind of that's the framework within I really look at Teddy Roosevelt and say, this is what we need more of. We do need more people that say, you know, we have problems and we have challenges, but we're going to work hard and overcome them from an individual perspective. But it was opposite your point. But again, he could have sat back and done nothing. But instead, he really embraced the idea of a strenuous life. He challenged people to do more, to be more, to become more, to give more to their country. And I think that those themes are something we could look for today as well.
Well, I think as long as you encourage people to do it voluntarily and you don't do it through coercion, using the government, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think, yeah, I would agree. He has a very heroic story as a young man, you know, remaking himself and beating his physical afflictions and rising over them. Looking at another president, and, you know, you have Ronald Reagan listed here as a rendezvous with destiny. Now, this is a guy in the 20th century who was as transformational as I would say FDR. You know, FDR was a transformational president in the New Deal area. 50 years later, Ronald Reagan comes along, and he is every bit as transformational.
Well, you know, he really, and I mean, I love Ronald Reagan. I have two Ronald Reagan speeches in this book. The first one that you mentioned was the Time for Choosing, which is his 1964 speech in support of Barry Goldwater. And this was his first really national moment. So it's a 30-minute speech. It's on nationwide TV. It was paid for by the Brothers for Goldwater, which was chaired for by which was chaired by John Wayne, who's a big hero of mine. But he has this great conservative speech, and he lays out core conservative values. And to me, what's interesting is that speech today, you could take that exact same speech, which you can see on YouTube if you want, mm-hmm. and you could put in today's facts and figures, and it would be just as applicable today. It's a great speech, and, you know, that's in 64. We have to remember that.
Timeless values.
And it's 64, but then he served from governor from 67 to 75. And then in 1980, he was finally elected president. So, you know, I think part of that is to remind ourselves that sometimes things do take a long time. But to your point exactly, these values really are timeless.
Let me ask you about some of the other presidents that Americans don't think of, but I actually think ought to be thought in very high regard. One who doesn't get a lot of credit from historians, and I would say that a lot of times when we judge what makes a great president, too oftentimes it's, you know, how does that individual act in a crisis moment? And we don't look and say, well, now, wait, hang on. Did they do something to cause the crisis that they are then attempting to solve, and then that makes them a big hero? What about the fact that they created the problem to begin with in the first place? Don't we give any demerit points, you know, for that? But let's think about a guy who, during his term of presidency, one term in the 20s, gave America peace and prosperity during his 4 years. That's Calvin Coolidge. I believe he was the man who said the business of America is business. And there's a guy, in my mind, who ought to be ranked a lot higher in great presidents because, you know, you look at unemployment was very low at a historical low during his time. And we had rising wages. We had a general level of prosperity during the time of Silent Cal that we haven't seen in this nation since.
Well, I think, and I'm so glad you brought him up. He's one of my personal favorites, and especially as we are today watching what's unfolding in other states. So we're watching Wisconsin and seeing what mm-hmm. happens there. You know, Calvin Coolidge first came to national prominence in 1919.
He was the governor of Massachusetts, wasn't he?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And he was, and under him, the Boston police force some of the policemen had gone on strike. Because of issues, wage issues, and so they were fired. And Samuel Gompers, who was a labor organizer, approached the governor, Calvin Coolidge, and said, can you intervene and help these guys get their jobs back? And he laid out, this is his quote, there is not a right to strike against the public safety by anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Yes.
And he upheld the Boston police commissioner's decision to fire the striking policeman. So I think you're exactly right. He was not a media hound. He did not go in for the flash. But he understood that American business needed solid basis so that they could work and prosper.
Now, another great one I would contend is the man who was elected to two separate terms as president, Grover Cleveland.
Interesting. Now, why do you, he is not included here. Maybe I should include him next time. Why do you like him so much?
One of the things I like about Cleveland was he was not an expansionist. And he was very much against the annexation of Hawaii. He looked over the issue and he said, you know, it'd be wrong for us to take this. It is a completely alien culture to us. It mm-hmm. will not help the Union. And see, you know, Cleveland was informed in his decision making, Jackie, by what had happened with the annexation of some of the far western territories, particularly California, and the conflicts between the Californios and the Mexicans and the Americans. And he saw that as a cautionary principle, looking at Hawaii and saying, you know, we just can't, we will absorb this, but it will be to our peril. And that's why he turned down, you know, the plans to expand into Hawaii. And then I believe it was his successor, Benjamin Harrison, that undertook that. Jackie, we have to roll here because it's almost the bottom of the hour. But Jackie Cushman has been our guest. She's the author of the new book, The Essential American, The 25 Documents and Speeches Every American Should Own. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you so much for having me on.